You all know the big news of the day, so we won't headline that. We're going to talk about it in some detail and get the view from Dr. Henry Nyman about that. Just a quick couple of other notes. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis is mocking all the lockdowners now as the flat earthers of today. Actually, Ron is behind the curve because there is a new flat earth movement running all over the internet now. He also says that closing schools in the spring was a big mistake. All right. 1 in 10 people may have already caught coronavirus, says the World Health Organization. And it warns of a new difficult period as the vast majority of people, 90%, are still virgin territory for the virus. But my words, not theirs. Let's see here. The CDC has re-released its guidance claiming that coronavirus airborne transmission is possible, but less common than originally thought. Okay? All right. Now, let's go to Dr. Henry Nyman, and he's loaded. He is locked and loaded, as they say. All right, Henry, welcome back. How's it look to you?
Well, it looks a little bit fuzzy, but fuzzy with a purpose. And it's the White House cluster is growing. It's up to 25 now. And it's the deciding event.
Wait a minute, 25 in the White House cluster. 25.
Well, they're not in the White House itself. They're associated with the Rose Garden event a little over a week ago now. And a lot of these people are not in the White House. They just were invited to the White House. So it's a White House event in the sense that it's people that basically are linked to the White House, or including the...
extended family members, I understand, so to speak.
Right. Well, they're either in the White House as far as employment is concerned, or they were at the White House because of they were invited.
So, wrong place at the wrong time. How many Democrats and how many Republicans? Are these mostly Republican types? They would be if they were in the White House or around it.
Yeah, I would put the number of Democrats, to my knowledge, is a solid zero. Mm-hmm. So there are no Democrats. These are Republican senators. These are Republican staffers. These are all kind of positions associated with Trump. I mean, this is Kellyanne Conway, Kayleigh McEnany.
McEnany.
Two of her aides.
Well, his campaign director. You pointed that out last week, I guess.
Right. The ones that the debate prep, like Chris Christie. I mean, these are all tightly linked. There's the president and his wife and his right-hand man and different staffers. They're very high levels.
Think of the timing on this, Henry. Why after all these months, nine months, why now? It's just bizarre how it all just exploded. Boom.
No, not at all. It was inevitable. It was just a matter of when it was going to happen.
Well, that's the point.
And when did
perfect
it happen?
Timing. Perfect timing in many ways for the opposition. If you think about it, two camps.
Right,
opposed.
Right.
They got the Democrats got a Christmas present early with this. This is a big deal.
Yeah, this is the October surprise, and it came right at the beginning of October. And I had talked last week about the index case being John Jenkins, because he was from Notre Dame.
Right.
He likely was infected not at the Rose Garden.
At the Rose Garden.
He was likely infected at Notre Dame, and so he would have walked in infected, which would be one of the requirements for that.
And thank you for sending the picture. And I think your wife sent it. Thank you to her, too.
Right.
That was interesting. It probably could be updated now, but he was sitting rather by himself at the top of the picture over on the right side, three rows back
or
something.
Yeah, he was in the third row. And
there you go.
Everybody infected. Actually, McEnany actually was in the fourth row, so she's the only one that wasn't in the first three rows, and he was there, and a few others. Mike Lee was in the third row also, I believe, and so was Tom Tillis, and in front of them was Kellyanne Conway, and in front of her was Melania, and then there were two. Right.
So how did this typhoid around and spread this so effectively in that group? He didn't just sit there and do it. He had to go up and talk to them. He had to be closer than...
Well, yeah. I mean, that picture was convenient because everybody was sitting down and you could see who everybody was. And you could see where they sat and you could see their proximity. But... in addition to the outdoor event, they had several indoor events, and those pictures emerged over the weekend.
And good time was
they
had
were,
by all.
Uh-huh. They had cocktails. They were hugging each other. They were talking at close quarters. I mean, it was inside, and so different people would. There would be different groups, but I think that the reason there were so many in the first three rows is those were probably the people that were most likely to be attending these indoor events also. So there was a lot going on at that meeting. Everything didn't happen while they were sitting there because, you know, they were outside. And the other smaller meetings were indoor, and their proximity was even closer because they were, you know, standing around speaking to each other. And so they were close, and, you know, there'd be loud there, so you had to kind of shout. And virtually nobody was wearing masks. And so it would be very easy for it to spread there. But there have been developments since Friday that suggests that maybe it wasn't John Jenkins, and maybe it was a combination. But the role of President Trump in this whole set of scenarios is getting more and more curious. And
what's your punchline here? What are you thinking?
Well, I think he was infected way before he acknowledged being infected. I mean, one of
like
the key
before
questions,
the debate.
Yeah, possibly even at the time of the Rose Garden. I mean, the key question was when did he last test negative? Because the argument was that. And they get tested all the time, and, you know, they're always negative, and therefore, you know, they don't really need to wear masks because, you know, it can't get picked up by the assay. Now, the two problems with that is that, one, the assay they use is this rapid test, and the rapid test isn't very sensitive. And so, can be negative and still have virus. And that's what I thought might have happened with John Jenkins. He got infected at Notre Dame. He came there and still was negative because the test wasn't that sensitive, but he had virus and he was able to transmit that. But then over the weekend, it became clear that Trump's entourage wasn't tested. I mean, they were doing tested at Case. I mean, the Cleveland Clinic was basically collecting samples, and they were testing to make sure that everybody that walked in the door was negative. And Trump's group, including Trump, apparently, arrived late, and they didn't get tested. So none of them really got tested coming in the door. They basically said, oh, we get tested all the time, da, 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 da. And so one of the questions really was, when was Donald tested negative? When was the last time? And nobody is willing to give an answer to that. It's not even they come up with an answer and say, well, I wonder how accurate that is. They won't even answer the question. So it's not clear when he was tested last, being negative, before he was positive. And then there were a few other inconsistencies. I don't know how well you've been following this, but his doctor, Sean Conley,
right,
just kept on coming up with one absurd story after the other. He had to change it. Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't answer the question of whether Trump needed oxygen, and he wouldn't answer the questions about how low did his
blood
oxygenation levels, how low did they go? And then the answers he gave were designed to be misleading. If you listen carefully, his numbers for the blood oxygen, first he said that, they didn't really drop, and then he kind of acknowledged that they did drop, but he said that they dropped twice, I think, on Thursday or Friday. I'm losing track of the days now, but the first time they dropped twice in the same day. And he said that one, it was below 94, and the other was 93.6. And then the next day it dropped again, and that one was, it wasn't in the low 80s. So from those descriptions, what do you think the three readings were? Under 94, 93.6, and not in the low 80s. Well, under 94 can be anything. It could be zero. That's under 94. So,
in other words, you're talking about the phraseology he used. Okay, that's the key here. It's all about how he said
it. Well, the number that he used, the 94 doesn't have to do much to do with anything.
Understand.
A lot of people assumed that when he said under 94, that it was 93 something. But he didn't say it was 93 something. In fact, when it was 93
something, could have been 67. We don't know.
Right. When it was 93 something, he said it was 93.6. So 93s, he'll give you the answer. 80 something, he'll say it's under 94. And the other one, this 80-something, they'll say, well, it wasn't the low 80s. So it almost definitely fell below 90. It went into the 80s twice. And did it with the first day it went down, and then the second day. Well, the first and the second day that they talked about it, it's not really clear exactly how many times it went down. But I mean, the key to, what reality is and what these nonsense reports that they keep putting out is how he's being treated. And, I don't know if you've been following that, but,
as I can.
They did medevac him to
Walter Reed.
Walter Reed. And, you know, as I said on Friday, he had breathing difficulties. And he definitely had breathing difficulties, and he definitely had low oxygen. And Mark Meadows even acknowledged that that's why they had to medevac him to Walter Reed. So he had
Mark
some
Meadows
serious
is in
issues.
Big trouble, by the way. Trump is furious.
Yeah. Trump well, then
said
kinda,
Mark
then,
said too much.
Yeah, I know. Everybody said too much because there's other reports that said that he didn't. He basically didn't want to acknowledge anybody was infected, and including himself. That he was going to try to wing it and pretend that none of this really happened, and not
Hello,
admit
hold
that
on,
anybody
hold on.
Was
let
positive.
Me back. Let me rewind here. Are we suggesting that there's a possibility that let's just have fun here? Patient zero might have been Trump himself. Did I hear you say that?
Yeah, I would say that is a distinct possibility.
Okay.
And
all right.
And
now this.
And the reason for that is A, he didn't say when he was last tested. Mm-hmm. B, there were some reports that indicated that he didn't really want to put out any information on anybody being infected, including himself. And then the timing of it was very confusing. The physicians went and said that, you know, he first, he was tested and was positive 72 hours before he got in the hospital. And if he did that brought things back to like, you know, Wednesday or so, Wednesday morning. And then they said he started his medication while he was still at the White House 48 hours earlier, and that would suggest that got started on Thursday or so. And those dates were a little bit too early. I mean, that would mean that he basically knew he was positive before he went to Minnesota, and he knew he was positive before he went to his golf course in New Jersey. And that would be pretty reckless, going to both of these events, knowing that he was positive. And then they said, well, you know, when they said it was 72 hours, they were really talking about not being 72 hours, but they were talking about that, you know, it was kind of 3 days before, but in the third day, and it was really at the end of the third day, and they're at a, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't make any sense. You know, they were basically trying to mm-hmm. convert the hours and essentially, you know, tell you that there weren't 24 hours in a day. You know, it was just stupid. So that made it sound like he might have known he was positive before he admitted to knowing that he was positive. And
so he was positive and he was positive.
If he was positive back on Wednesday, and he won't say when he was tested prior to being positive on Wednesday, it's conceivable that he's been positive for, he goes all the way back to the weekend or so.
So he blew up his own administration.
Right. But regardless of whether it was him or whether it was John Jenkins or whether it was the two of them or whether it was John Jenkins and somebody else that managed to slide in there without being tested because they arrived late, you know, it's not clear. I mean, they could get a resolution to that with sequencing because, John Jenkins, you know, likely was infected at Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, yeah.
And there's a good chance that the virus that was circulating at Notre Dame wasn't the virus that was circulating in Washington, D.C. And therefore, by looking at the sequence, not I took a look at what sequences were available in Indiana recently. And unfortunately, there's 30 sequences there, but most of those sequences were collected in March or April. There was only one sequence that was collected in July. And July, you know, over the summer is with Amy Connie Barrett was also infected. And there was a pretty good size infection going on at Notre Dame. And it actually continued. I think 39 of the football players are positive recently. And John Jenkins said it was an associate of his that had been symptomatic and then tested positive. And the positive result of the associate is what made John Jenkins get tested. So he was tested himself. He wasn't tested by the White House. And he was positive based upon a test that was done back at Notre Dame. And so the one sequence that was generated in July, it was fairly distinctive. It was a mixture, and it had two or three mutations in the spike gene. And that's somewhat unusual to have that many. And it was sequenced by the CDC. And so the question would be, what does John Jenkins look like? Does it look like this sequence that was in Indiana in the summer, in the middle of the summer, actually? I think it was in mid-July. And what did everybody at the Rose Garden have? Did they all have kind of this Indiana / Notre Dame sequence, or did they have something that might have been circulating in the D.C. area, or even wherever Trump had been going, traveling to? I think he had a meeting down in Georgia, and he had a meeting down in Florida, like at the end of the a few days prior to the Rose Garden. So sequence wise, it might be able to resolve it if we can look and see.
I'm not going to get the sequences.
Virus was the number that are infected is pretty far and wide. And actually, you said how many Democrats, and I'll take I'll modify my response to zero. There were I think three or four reporters who were positive. And
they haven't named those reporters yet, to my knowledge.
No, they named one of them. They named the one from the New York Times, shares the name of the one from the New York Times. The other one they haven't named yet. So some of the names are out there. But I would think that there would be a reasonable chance that the reporters would be ready, willing, and able to find out what the sequence of the virus was so that they could figure out how they got infected and who the index case was.
Well, if any of them were Democrats in their leaning or liberals, they probably would if they knew that that's the way to try and construct
it. I think they probably would because they were reporters for they covered the White House, and the reporters basically weren't thrilled in general with the policy that there were a lot of the people that they were interviewing, including the ones who would give press briefings, Kaylee
McEnany.
So she would go in front of them, on a daily basis without a mask and kind of view out whatever was going to come out of her mouth. And unfortunately, apparently may not have only been words. And
17 feet is what you need. you're really going to social distance.
Yeah, well, well, she's positive, and not only was she positive, but two of her aides were positive. So that kind of suggested, there'd be several people that could be infecting these reporters that got infected, and I would assume that some of the reporters anyway weren't thrilled with the fact that, you know, they were doing their job, they were covering the White House, and the White House was, you know, had a policy which was absurd. And it was a policy that was guaranteed that sooner or later there was going to be some serious transmission of the virus because they didn't wear masks. And they didn't allow personnel to work from home. They required them to come in to the office. And they were using an assay that really wasn't that sensitive. And there had already been instances previously with others that Miller's wife had already been infected.
And, what happened to her? We don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Is she back with Pence?
I don't know. You never really hear about her that much. I haven't really looked at closely recently. I was looking after she was infected to see when she was coming back, and it didn't.
Right.
Didn't never she came back it. Anytime soon. But
maybe she's a long hauler.
There were Secret Service that were infected. There were advanced people at these rallies that were infected. There were apparently a couple staff people that were infected back in July that they didn't really talk about. So there were a lot of ways that the virus could spread and could, you know, create a problem for the reporters, because the reporters were basically covering the White House and the policies of the White House with respect to masks and who needed to come into work and who was running around to rallies and who was infected at the rallies. And it just seemed that it was inevitable that was going to get inside the circle and it was going to spread.
Point made.
And, that's what happened.
My question. And you're not an MD, but you sure as hell know your stuff. How sick was Trump? Let's assume he was sick for 7 days, 8 days.
I would say
before he really
say
had
is.
To go in.
I would say is. I'm not going to put it in the was category.
Okay, let's say he's quote not out of the woods yet. I understand. He's
exactly.
Still sick. Right.
Well, here I'll explain why. Now, the caveat is I'm not an MD. Okay, but
I said that
I've got a pretty good idea what these drugs are that he's on and who they give them to and what they mean. Okay, so how many drugs do you think he's on? Well, you should know what he's on, but
I know
how
he's
many
on.
Drugs is
he's
he
on Remdesivir, Regeneron, steroids unnamed.
Right.
So there's
right.
Three. Probably Tylenol. Probably blood thinners.
Right. Well, the first three you gave were the three that are most important, because those were the three that were prescribed by the physicians after he had COVID. Okay, so let's go through them. Okay, the first one is from, you know, as you said, Regeneron's monoclonal cocktail, which is two monoclonals that are injected. And just to give you an idea, that I call the monoclonals basically a drug deal. And the reason I call them a drug deal is because the injection is for 8 grams of monoclonal antibody.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Now, to give you an idea, this will give you a sense of what 8 grams is. That, you know, one of the more popular treatments for rheumatoid arthritis is Humira. You've probably seen Humira ads, and that's a monoclonal that's a monoclonal antibody, and that's given by injection. Typically, people with arthritis get an injection once a week. And how much antibody do they get? You know, they get a weekly injection. It's actually the arthritis used to be treated with hydroxychloroquine, if you recall that, you know, one of the applications with arthritis. And and then basically back in the day, you really had to fail these older treatments to get the insurance to approve Humira because it's fairly expensive, but it's probably easier to get it now. But 10 years ago, that's what you had to do. And if you do get the Humira, the monoclonal antibody, it kind of keeps the arthritis under control by attacking some of the cells that cause the arthritis. And how much antibody you think you get when you get this injection on a weekly basis? If you take a shot, how much monoclonal?
Once a week?
Yeah, you get it once a week.
Well, how many is he getting a week?
Well,
he's only been treated for three days.
He just got one dose. Yeah. I mean, it's a one shot deal. The Humira. When you get a shot of Humira, you get 40 milligrams, okay? So the amount that Trump got isn't like, you know, 10 times that. That would be 400 milligrams.
No, and he got like pounds
worth. It's not even 100 times that. That would be
correct.
4,000 milligrams. He got 8,000 milligrams.
Yeah.
He got 8,000 milligrams as opposed to 40. Okay, so he got a ton of monoclonal antibody. So he got
Why were they giving him that much? Was he that sick? Are they just taking a chance? What are they? Is he a guinea pig? What are they doing?
Well, okay. The trial that Regeneron ran, they did two doses. One was 8 grams. The other was, I think, 2.6 grams.
That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot. Yeah.
And they're both high. But they didn't elect to give Trump the 2.6. They elected to give him the 8. And so the fact that he was getting 8, the higher dose, was an indication that they were treating his condition very aggressively. Okay.
Right.
And then the next day, they added remdesivir. And remdesivir is an antiviral. It's a nucleotide analog. So they're basically giving them a nucleotide that the virus incorporates and then it terminates the copying of the genetic information, and the virus can't really make its RNA copies, and therefore it can't really grow. And so that's how that drug works. But it's given IV and it's given over 5 days. And it's given kind of late stage. These are people, they're severe cases. Severe cases are the ones that are given remdesivir, because all of these medications have side effects, and so they don't just give it out like candy and say, "Here, try some remdesivir, see how it does." You know, you have to be pretty sick to qualify for that, and that's I mean just to back up, the monoclonal is not FDA approved, and it's not even approved for emergency use. It's just compassionate use.
That's really rolling the dice. I think Mark Meadows was correct when he said they were really worried.
Right. And when you get to compassionate use, that's, again, something that you usually, it's a last resort. It's something that you're going to use because there's really nothing else that's going to work. And it's not approved yet, but you're going to kind of, like you said, roll the dice and see if this will help. So that's where they started. They started with a drug that has not been approved, and you can only get it for compassionate use. The second one is remdesivir, which is used for people that are severely ill. And then the dexamethasone was the third drug, okay? And the dexamethasone is a steroid, and it's done to kind of depress the immune system. So they're given the monoclonal, which is kind of to stimulate the immune system. And then they were given dexamethasone to suppress the immune system. And the reason dexamethasone is only for advanced cases. And those are people that have severe breathing difficulties.
They're critical condition.
Right. And the reason is that the dexamethasone is to kind of go after the to prevent a cytokine storm. And so they're worried about an overactive immune system is making all these cytokines, and when they get done attacking the virus, they start attacking the host
good
cells
tissues.
And they start causing that kind of damage.
But Trump had
and
a
so
defense
therefore,
against that. It's called aspartame.
And then the only reason, the only people that get the dexamethasone are people that are are usually on ventilators or at least have very severe breathing difficulties. And again,
well, you're painting
kind of
quite
this,
a picture here, my friend. This is
bad
stuff.
Well, the doctors did. I didn't prescribe it.
Well, you're just relaying it. I got it. But I mean, what you're describing here is somebody who was they had reason, more than one reason, to suspect he was critical and could go acute at any moment, or vice versa.
Right, and unfortunately, what typically happens on the ones that do go acute, if you will, they get into serious trouble. They do kind of follow this course where they treat them and they respond and they start feeling better. And it looks like they're improving. And then all of a sudden they just crash. And the reason they crash is because the immune system does get overheated. And you do get this cytokine storm. And they all of a sudden take a dive. And so Trump...
So you wouldn't be surprised if they medevac him out of there tomorrow.
Not at all. Yeah, you're exactly right. I would not be surprised at all. I mean, I was surprised they medevaced him out of there because they know this. And they've even said this. They said, well, it's usually between days 5 and 10 that you have this crash. And they know about the crash. And that was the reason they were taking him there to Walter Reed, because they would help, a whole army of physicians there, and all kind of machines that come into play if you do get into this serious condition, and they need to quickly respond and try to recover. And they don't want to start medevacing you when you're, crashing.
I understand.
Because it's not ideal. And so
let me dump something in here that might be interesting to you. The departure from the White House, where he took off on Marine One, I have a friend who knows a bit about this, and he said that the claim was there was no actual recorded footage of Trump walking to Marine One. And that he showed it later on. It was not a one roll deal from the White House into the Marine One, and he takes off. It was Marine One, And then later they showed the alleged footage of him walking to Marine One. But my friend said he watched underneath Marine One the whole time, and there were no feet visible walking to it before it took off. So I don't know what that means.
Well,
unless
the
he was stretchered in there.
The shots that I saw, basically, you could only see feet that were right next to the plane. You could see the guard's feet that was standing there at the front of the plane. But, from a distance, you didn't have a good enough angle. You could just see barely right past that. I think there were stairs that he would have gone up. And he went up, of course, the back of the plane, and the shots that were being carried were really more of the front of the plane, so you really couldn't see the back of the plane. So I think that had to do more with the
He was in very serious condition when he was medevaced. That's, I think, what we can wrap this up. And it could have gone south, but maybe the massive 8-gram dose, for example, somehow at least delayed the crash, which he was due for. Delayed it.
Yeah, all of these could delay it. I mean, how many people do you think have received all three of these drugs together?
Probably zero.
one.
Yeah, him. Other than him, zero.
Exactly. He's the only person that's ever got all three of these drugs together. And so they have no idea what the outcome of giving those three drugs simultaneously or sequentially, one right after the other, 3 days in a row, essentially is what he got. And so it's wide open exactly what's going to happen and whether the dexamethasone was done at the right time and the right dose, and is that going to knock out the cytokine storm but not knock out, the ability to first get the virus under control.
He was a complete guinea pig.
And so all of those are basically kind of unknowns right now because it's never been done before. And then the other aspect, I mean, Trump went and wrote this summary of saying, well, he's going home, things are great. He hasn't felt this good since in 20 years, is basically what he said. And, I mean, he literally is on steroids. he's got these 6 milligrams of dexamethasone. And, steroids kind of make you perky and make you feel good, and you get this high dose. And there's no doubt that they would make him feel good, but they wouldn't necessarily. The role of the medication isn't to make him feel good. It's to basically knock out his immune system. it's a matter of...
This is a prednisone family type of thing.
Right. Yeah, they end in the same O-N-E. If they end in O-N-E, they're all steroid. Yeah, mm-hmm. Dexamethasone.
Well, as they say, he's not out of the woods yet, and I think we concur on that.
Correct. And so the issue, though, getting back to the significance, assuming that, it's never been done before, but he's got doctors that are keeping close tabs on him, and one way or another, he'll pull through. He might pull through in that he won't get medevac back. It'll basically be a good combination, and they've treated him relatively early, although that's why I say nobody's received this treatment this early. I mean, usually remdesivir is given later, when people are getting into trouble and they're in the ICU, and dexamethasone is the same thing. And then the monoclonals, there's probably less than 150 people that have received it, and half of them, I think, got the lower dose. So the number of people that have gotten this higher dose and that matches demographics is probably a handful, and none of them got these other two drugs layered on top of them. And so it's wide open. But
he's making medical history.
Right. He's making medical history. But the problem is that a lot of people thought that, well, you know, he really hasn't managed this pandemic very well, which is why there's 210,000 Americans that are dead. And this will kind of make him realize that it's not like the flu and it's serious, and he went downhill very quickly.
Well, he does
and,
appear to be somewhat chastened in his attitude and what he said. Yes.
Well, I don't know how chastened he was. He made a couple comments. Before he left, he says he's gone to school on COVID, and
right.
Now he knows a whole lot more than he knew going in, which is a little bit shocking since the pandemic's been around for 7 months. You'd think that he would have been schooled back in January or February.
Well, he was being schooled by Jerry Kushner. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, he thinks he's been schooled in part because he's basically been infected himself, and he's kind of gone through this. But the problem is when he got back, he's basically putting out the story that, you know, he got through it and don't be afraid of it. And he's kind of laying the groundwork back into this. This isn't a big deal. Look at, I had the virus. I went in the hospital. I got out in 3 days. And I think he said he had the highest viral load that anybody's ever seen. I mean, he threw that in.
Is that, now, if that's true, that's a very big angle here. That's important.
Well, unfortunately, the doctor was asked that several times. What's his viral load?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he wouldn't answer. I mean, they asked whether he had lung damage. What did the CT scan looked like, and he invoked HIPAA, and he couldn't really say, actually, he invoked HIPAA, I think, on another one. For the lungs, he said, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing unexpected, like, well, he had COVID, and you kind of expected there to be lung damage, and he's not going to tell you whether he had lung damage or not. So there really wasn't a whole lot of information forthcoming. The main information was, you know, which drugs did he take? When did he take them?
Right. Coming up on 3 minutes, Henry, so you know.
And how long it's been. So the concern now is that he is going to flip things over. And he's going to say that COVID isn't a big deal. And you know, the fact that there's this pandemic isn't that big a deal, because the virus isn't that big a deal. And so he's going back to, you know, as I said a couple of weeks ago, we're coming up on an election. And you're going to get all these weirdo stories, like the PCR doesn't work and you got to isolate the virus and people really aren't that sick and there aren't that many cases. And somebody just came out saying that the numbers are elevated by the healthcare workers because they get paid more if there are more cases that they have to handle, or something along those lines. And, you know, I've said this before and it's bears repeating, and the excess deaths don't have anything to do with any diagnostic, with any PCR test, with anything other than whether people are dead and how many are dead. And the number that are dead are on a par with 1918. I mean, you've got these elevated deaths there for many, you know, 20 weeks in a row now in many of the states. And the numbers are now starting to go up again. And so when you get to the number of deaths for 1918, that was really over a 2-year period. And all we really had is the Herald wave. And so the numbers are starting to go up. It is the fall. Kids have gone back to school. They're spreading the virus. They're going to be bringing the virus home to their parents and grandparents.
Right.
And
Christmas gift time.
Yes. And so the numbers are going to take off. And and the deaths are going to take off.
Well, the doctors had a pretty good time using apparently a very sick man to try some of these new approaches, and maybe it worked. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll
find out. But I can tell you that if you take dexamethasone, you will feel good for a few days.
Well,
anyway.
If Joe Biden were really a good guy, he would have sent some of his methamphetamine over to Donald and said, "Here, if you need this, you got it." But that's another story. Henry, very interesting analysis. We'll see how he's doing on Wednesday.
Yep.
And another two days will tell the story.
It's going to be day to day, right. I mean, you should know, in the 5 days or so. If he's feeling fine in 5 days and he's still in the White House or getting ready to go on the campaign trail again.
Well, the debate's coming up on the 15th, the next one. So it's a week from Thursday.
Yeah, that's the vice president one, right?
No, the next presidential debate is a week from Thursday.
That's 15th. Not happening. That there is no way that's happening.
Well, Biden will be on meth, and Donald will be on steroids, and it'll be a three-ring circus.
Yeah, they gotta put them in plexiglass cages to take that. I mean, they would have to do it remotely.
So the tomatoes don't stick; they'll slide off. I get you.
Mm-hmm. Actually, for the vice president one, I think there is going to be plexiglass. So it's
Wednesday.
That one's still wide open.
Very good. Very good. Very good analysis.
Okay.
That's what we needed, and we got it. Thank you, Henry. Excellent.
Okay. We'll give an update on Wednesday. Okay. Take care. Talk to you.
Good night. Okay. There you go. And I guarantee you've heard nowhere else that kind of information. All right. All put together like that for you. Thanks for being here. Be back with you tomorrow night. Talk to you then.